In this episode of the Smart City podcast, I had a great chat with placemaker Kylie Legg. Kylie is the founder of PlaySchool. We discuss how PlaySchool aims to positively change the way the engagement with community happens and change the way data is collected and stored in order to be used effectively across multiple projects. Kylie and I discuss the need for a more holistic approach to assets and sharing the space we have, as well as how young people show up in the data and in the smart city space. Kylie offers some great insights into thinking about how smart cities should focus on health and well-being and a systems approach to community making. We also touch on the importance of awareness into the impacts technology can have on a place so we can shape the outcomes positively. As always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
It's the Smart City Podcast, whoa, with Smart City experts, here we go. Connecting smart technology, both big and small. Smart cities are making life better for all. Big data, emerging trends, self-driving cars and more. The Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hi Kylie, how are you going this morning?
I'm well, thanks Zoe.
That's awesome to hear. We'll just jump straight into it and we'll start in the past. So can you tell us a bit about your background and what you're passionate about?
So I did my undergraduate degree in architecture and then moved into exhibition design and sort of project management and before going into planning. But right now I am a placemaker and I guess going the reason my sort of journey has kind of landed me here is because I've always been really interested in the relationship between people and their environments and how do we allow, I guess, the community to better understand what the built environment professionals are kind of involved with, but also to provide them with much better opportunities to get involved in both the decision making and also the responsibility for making the cities that they care about and value.
Yeah, awesome. So what kind of sparked your interest in smart cities?
I think it follows on from that, you know, so 15 years now in placemaking. And more recently, I've kind of made a bit of a tech play in terms of a more data driven approach to community engagement. And really what it started with is that I was a little bit worried that with this sort of new big trend and interest in smart cities that we were going to, I guess, forget about the human beings and that it would be all exciting about what kind of the future of autonomous vehicles and kind of smart this and smart that and actually were we going to make cities better for people. So I was fortunate to be invited onto the Smart Cities NZ Built Environment Task Force. And, yeah, my purpose there really is to make sure that we keep on track for the primary purpose of cities, which is making them better for human beings.
Yeah, awesome. So is there any particular technologies that you've come across in that space that you're really interested in exploring or are currently exploring?
Yeah, I think, I mean, without naming kind of specific kind of organisations, I guess there's sort of key themes that I'm interested in, definitely around increasing efficiencies and reducing waste. Probably where I'm really positioned is about making more rigorous decisions that are evidence-based and being able to share information and processes. Because I work across a lot of different areas, like both physically as well as sort of across industries, is that I see sort of people trying to struggle with the same problems and having to kind of reinvent the wheel, particularly in areas that don't have as many resources. So this kind of, you know, opportunity, I guess, that's presented to share the resources, share those systems and processes, that's really excites me. So that's anything from kind of car sharing, parking sharing, sort of how do you more efficiently use what we already have, energy management, water, waste management. But again, you know, it all comes back to going like if we can use less sort of money and time on those things, then we can focus more on how do we make these environments better for people.
Yeah, definitely. That's really interesting way to think of it. Like a sharing economy kind of fits straight into the smart city space, so we're not reinventing the wheel over and over again.
Yeah, and we keep, you know, the, some of the problems with affordability and kind of like the kind of ongoing spread of cities, which then costs more to service, is because we everything we think has to have a single purpose, a single use. So one car space, one person, kind of one road that's used for a single reason. But we need to start thinking much more holistically about where we invest, so that actually those investments have the best kind of return for the whole community, not just for a single segment of the community.
Yeah, definitely. So let's jump into what you're up to right now and what kind of projects and things are you working on?
So I have a company called Place Score, and what we are doing with Place Score is to change the way that we engage with community, not just by allowing them a sort of an online presence, because there's lots of people doing that, but actually changing the way that we collect and store data so that it can be actually reused for multiple projects. So we have a product called Care Factor, which is a census-like capture of place values that particularly local government is really behind. It allows them to do, instead of the 20 or so project-based surveys that they might do every year, they can do one large survey once every 3 to 5 years, which actually means they can do it a lot better, get better representation, and then they can use that data for multiple projects. So it becomes, as I said, like the census. And then the other half of it is a place experience measurement tool, which takes kind of consultants and other people out of the picture and allows communities to actually assess their own environments. So they are telling us how livable they find those places. And when those two data sets come together, then it actually allows a very clear picture of what should be prioritized. So basically, high care factor, low performance equals high priority. So we're aiming to be able to provide a transparent process for the community and a really rigorous evidence-based data set to government to guide more effective investment in our urban environments.
Yeah, wow, that sounds really interesting. Can you dive a bit deeper and kind of just explain the types of criteria or things that are measured against?
So we've got three environments that we actually are working in at the moment. One is the neighbourhood scale. So that's really looking at the systems approach to kind of community making. So a focus on land use, connectivity, services. So what most planners are involved with in strategic planning. And we're doing a lot of work in that area, particularly with state governments. So they're really looking at how do we actually make communities, particularly as they might be going into periods of change, work and prioritise what it is that the people there I think is most important. Then we do a street level or town centre environments, and that can get down to the nitty-gritty of going, do we have enough open space? Is there enough trees? What do the shop fronts look like? Is there enough, the right mix of businesses? Are there services that we can actually access in our streets? There's a lot of energy at the moment going into how do we make our centres work, particularly with the changes in technology. So changes to retail, we're going to see changes, increasing changes to the way that people move around cities. And what are the impacts that are on these really important parts of our cities, which is the places where we actually physically connect with one another. This tool actually allows them, allows government and as well as the corporate sector to really focus on the things that are going to make the human experience of those places better. And then we also have a workplace tool. So that's focusing on what's the workplace experience like? And there's a mixture there. It's kind of really interesting actually between what does your office environment offer to the people working there, but also how does location and relationship to kind of other places also impact on employee experience. So it's not just about the culture of the workplace, where there's lots of people working in that and doing some really fantastic work, but we don't really think very often about, access to transport or even to coffee or places where you can get away from your desk. Nationally trending at the moment, particularly for younger people, is access to fresh air and natural light. So when we can understand what it is that people really value, then we can be talking to our built environment professionals saying, well, how do we get more of this? Because this is actually what makes people happy.
Yeah, cool. No, it's a really interesting concept and kind of like two things that obviously are very related, but you don't really think of them in the same breath, you know, community and then your workplace and how that kind of impacts people's well-being. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Thanks. We're pretty excited about it. So there's about over 15,000 people have done one of our surveys up until about last week. And we've got a whole, I think we've got five going online in the next 2 weeks across the country. So West Australia, Queensland, and New South Wales, quite a lot of stuff. So the more data we can collect, the more rigorous we can be in terms of segmenting as well. So, you know, we can actually really look particularly at younger people. I just don't think they're very well represented at the moment in any kind of social research or engagement. Market research, yes, but in terms of kind of the cities we're making are for younger people. I've made this kind of dark joke, I think, a number of times of saying that, you know, we've got a lot and it's changing, but 60-year-old men designing for 13-year-old girls, like that by the time many of the decisions come into play, these young people are going to be the purchasers of homes. You know, we're talking 15, 40-year plans. I'm working on them myself, and yet we don't get insights into that community very well. So we have been really fortunate to partner with universities to collect data for younger people. So in New South Wales alone, I think we have about 2,000 people under the age of 21 in our data set. So we can actually go in there and really clearly see what it is that's most important to them and really be able to advocate on their behalf.
Yeah, definitely. That was the one of the things I was going to ask. How are you getting young people to do surveys, because typically that's a very hard task, and yeah, you'd have to use technology and other incentives to get people to do it, I guess.
It's really interesting going that the uptake is incredibly high. I actually yesterday was doing training for some of we do have face-to-face on-site surveyors, and generally they're younger. So I had seven people yesterday, and born, I think there was only one out of the seven that was born in Australia, incredible diversity. And, you know, their feedback and kind of like when we were getting them to do it and kind of teaching them about it and, you know, the experience of other people that have been doing the work already is that the uptake is really high because people fundamentally, number one, love talking about their home, right? That people are really proud and they're really invested in it. And secondly, I think the reason why younger people might be involved is because they're not getting the chance to clearly articulate what's important to them in a way that they understand, that's transparent, that's not about me kind of listening to a group of them in the room and then writing up my notes about it. You know, they understand democracy, they understand data, and so they actually are much more invested in this. So we have a really high uptake of people both on the street as well as online who go, yeah, I get this, I'll do that. I can see how it will make a difference because I can see the transparency of it.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think that's really important. I've mentioned a couple of podcasts now, but I'm part of a group called the Smart City Council Emerging Innovators, and we're about bringing the young voice to the smart city space, and I mean to the table, I suppose. And I guess, yeah, we're all young people and we're all we want to be heard, but typically, yeah, traditionally it's been a difficult kind of process. And that's why we created the platform. And it sounds like, you know, it's a similar thing. We're passionate about it. We know it will make a difference. So if you can not sell, but, you know, if you're marketing what you're doing as making a difference, yeah, you will get young people involved. It's an interesting way to think about it.
We're also interested in kind of like talking to people, as you said, who aren't normally kind of engaged in these decisions because they don't trust the process. Like they're like, oh, if I turn up at that workshop and spend 2 hours of my time, then, you know, something will change. Whereas by building kind of this big, you know, we're trying to build a big data set. We're not pulling down data and saying we think it means this. We're like going, no, this has been designed specifically for this person. The methodology has been proven. so they can kind of get that. But we're also partnering. So we're going live, I think, sometime today with GoGet out to their database. So we're really interested in people who are already thinking differently about cities and making sure that their voices are heard. So we can go through traditional methods of working with governments to go through their databases, and we might get people who still are the ones that are more likely to get involved, but who are those voices that just have sort of, I mean, I hate to say it, but it may be a bit given up, that, you know, that they're kind of like, well, we just have to innovate. Like, we just have to be the ones that make decisions, and we'll support shared cars, or we'll work in these different organisations to find a different way. You know, so we go out to places like we went out to the Newtown Sustainability Festival to kind of get those voices heard. We'll go into more traditional, we're at the Easter show in next week, to really make sure that we are getting good representation from across the country, not just the kind of standard ways.
Yeah, awesome. So where do you think that Australia kind of ranks when it comes to smart cities?
This is a really interesting question, because I think to a certain extent we've only been really talking about it for about the last 12 to 18 months. A few years ago now, about 4 years ago, I wrote a book called Future City Solutions, and I was looking at kind of what was going on globally from government's perspective in terms of planning for the future and how they were doing it and kind of what was being really innovative, and sort of spent quite a bit of time looking at some of the smart cities, so I think going South Korea and then also Tallinn in Estonia. And this is kind of amazing, kind of, I was ready to go, oh my God, these people are so ahead of us, like going there, completely integrated transport systems, single cards across the whole country, you know, free. They worked out that it was actually cheaper for them to make it free than to manage the system. So they just did that. And then that meant less cars on the road, which meant building less. So they understood the relationship between kind of the efficiencies of technology and how you could use those savings to actually make kind of better cities and better countries. I think the people in Australia have been working on it for a really long time, and there's lots of people across, I guess, again, industries and at different levels within kind of the tech play. Really hard to kind of say, oh, okay, I think we're number one or we're number 40. I think it's being just revealed now. We're involved, PlaceScore is involved with Austrade as one of their sort of global case studies. And I met with a whole lot of UK smart cities companies on Monday. While they're all really super clever, I wasn't like, oh my God, I've never heard of that before. So I think that's a good sign that we've got, you know, we're not kind of certainly behind in terms of the innovation or the creativity of our solutions. I think we will see how it plays out in the next sort of 2 to 5 years about how well we can establish it as really as both a professional market and also in terms of integration into government.
Yeah, cool. Well, that leads quite well onto my next question, is how can we better integrate across the different disciplines, you know, government, industries, academia, that all those type of people that need to come together, all the players that need to come together to build a smart city?
This is always the prime challenge, because a placemaker, kind of my primary job is aligning stakeholders around a common vision for a place and then getting everyone to use their resources to actually achieve that vision, no matter what those resources may be. And I think that that's what currently may be missing in the smart cities movement. At this Austrade Future Cities Jam on Monday, when we were talking about what are the problems we need to solve, and again, coming from a very human-centric position, fundamentally for me, the single biggest challenge we are facing as a country and as citizens is the fact that our communities are getting sicker and sadder. And I thought it really sort of encapsulated, you know, all the lifestyle diseases that we're having, the increases in kind of, obviously we're going to be having it with as people age and being able to provide additional care, the rates of depression and anxiety across kind of ages, the rates of suicide, going, something's not right. You know, like we're not, if we're having these problems, if we could put that at the lead of the thing that we're all going to work towards, I think that that would allow us to integrate better because it would give us a common purpose. If the purpose is just to kind of, you know, we want to be smarter than them and we want to have more technology in our area, there's nothing behind it. There's no why. Like, why would we do that? If we don't have a why, and I love that Simon Sinek thing, it's really kind of turned my world around, then I don't, it's very hard to measure sort of success and impact. You can have just more of something, but it may not change anything.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think the why is really important, and sometimes we miss that. We just get dazzled by the shiny toys, I guess.
Oh, and there's some really shiny stuff. I'm just not sure if I'd choose that over a, you know, a nice place to walk near my neighbourhood.
Yeah, definitely. So do you think that Australia can become leaders in this space?
Yeah, I think what's been really interesting, again, over the sort of last 12 to 18 months when it's been picked up across so many different industries and sectors, is the area where I'd like to see us is kind of become experts is around more around the smart city thinking, strategy, systems, processes, governance. I think there is a real need for systematic change rather than just focusing again on just like the actual tech. So kind of I think we've always been really good at solving those problems and, you know, our approach because we are kind of more I believe we're quite egalitarian and even things like community engagement have been really much quicker uptake in Australia than anywhere else. The placemaking movement, again, a much quicker uptake because people are actually, again, sharing that sort of goal. We could become real leaders in how to really provide exemplars of that integrated approach, the systematic approach. And that I think is really exciting because governance is going to be one of the biggest challenges of how do you actually change old regulatory systems? How do you change old ways of thinking? And to a certain extent, that's more valuable than coming up with the next kind of rocket ship or whatever it might be.
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, that's a really good point that we can have as many rocket ships as we want, but if we don't change that old kind of way of thinking, then we'll be continually stuck in the past pushing against, this blockage or barrier.
Yeah, yes, we might need more manufacturing and certainly kind of some of the more new technology manufacturing, but fundamentally, you know, that if we don't have a knowledge economy, if we don't have really interesting and creative jobs for the human beings, again, we're going to run into big troubles because nobody wants to be treated like a robot and nobody wants to act like one. So kind of if we're just a sidebar, kind of it's not going to be a very great place to live. You know, we love all of that socialization. We're great problem solvers as a country and we need to make space for that. It just doesn't always have to be about a thing. It can be about ideas as well. And I, again, you know, I think we're exceptional at that and we've proven it over and over again that we can, as a country, solve really big problems. So that's what I kind of hope for us.
Yeah, cool. So what do you think the emerging trends are that people aren't talking about?
You know, I've kind of, because I do a lot of Main Street revitalization and kind of town centre kind of work, people, one of the ongoing issues have been like parking, and it's always parking is the problem, which I think is, and we can go into that, but we're not a parking podcast, so I won't go into it. But the like the solution of people saying, oh, it's going to be autonomous cars. I think going that there is two sides to kind of most of this technology. And for me, I guess the trend that I'd like to share is sort of thinking about the role of main streets and town centres for the health and well-being of our communities. And they're really struggling right now, and no amount of new light poles and kind of the things is going to make them more attractive if it's easier and more convenient to purchase everything over the internet or, you know, via an autonomous vehicle or a driven vehicle sort of bringing things to us. So for me, I guess the thing that I'd really like to keep kind of at people's centre is that the reason why cities came into being ever, you know, the point of a town centre or a city growing is for exchange. And that exchange has at its core a very human aspect to it. So the reason it was about the place where you'd come to exchange information from far away. It's a place, obviously, of trade, but really important about social connections and people being able to meet people that they wouldn't normally perhaps come in contact in their villages or farms or whatever it might be. With the increase in technologies, yeah. a lot of the purpose of cities for that has actually changed. So the advent of the telephone meant that people didn't have to go outside anymore to speak to each other. So public space changed. You know, when we started putting food into supermarkets, the nature of trade changed, and we're desperately trying to get markets back as kind of with a social and beautiful human experience. So I think going the autonomous car story, I have really kind of want people to get in front of the potential impact that it's going to have on our streets, not because it's going to potentially reduce parking, but because the level of convenience offered by it will actually inhibit the lived experience of being out on the street, the need to kind of do the promenade of running into people, of walking past a shop and seeing something that's beautiful and going in and actually hearing the story of where it came from. If you are getting driven home by your car, you're much less likely to do the stop off when you see something. When you're driving yourself, you're much more aware of your surroundings and you will stop. If you're being driven in your car and you're like, oh gosh, I forgot the milk, and it's already programmed to get you home, you're more likely to get on your phone and get another autonomous vehicle to go and pick up your milk and get it delivered to you at home. There's a bad future, the dystopian version of technology, that I think we need to be aware of. We weren't aware of it the first time around about the impact of private vehicles. And I'd really like us to make sure that we're thinking about, you know, not just saving parking spaces, but actually what it means to save the places where human beings want to come together.
Yeah, definitely. It's a really interesting way to think about it. And I think we definitely need to think of both sides. So, yeah, both sides of the coin with technology. And really appreciate that.
This is why I'm kind of a funny smart cities person, because, you know, the key definition of smart cities is actually about using technologies to make people's lives better. I mean, it's actually in most of the definitions. And I kind of really just keep focusing on that, of reminding people, like, how do we make life better? How do we make life better? And just making sure we understand that there's some things that might have some short-term gains, but there might be a lot of long-term pain too. So how do we balance that? And I think it's going to be a big challenge for government particularly to really be able to make some hard decisions against the things that might look like a really great answer today but could have really negative impacts in the future.
Yeah. So I just have one last question, which is, how can people connect with you?
Probably the easiest, if you're on the Twitter, it's a place score is there, and also on Facebook. I'm also at kylie@placescore.org, and I'd love to hear from anyone who might be interested in talking to me about human smart cities. Maybe that's why I'll make a new movement.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I'll put all that in the show notes so people can connect with you really easily. And it's been really great to talk to you this morning, Kylie. I think the human-centric approach, people talk about it a lot, and I've talked to a lot of people on the podcast about that. And coming from an engineering background, sometimes I forget about the human. So it really is great to ground me back
Well,
again.
I'm glad other people are talking about it.
You know, the flashy toys. I mean, yeah, I'm really interested in the boring technology, not just the flashy toys, but, like, you know, making processes better and that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, we want more livable cities or more livable places, not even cities. So, yeah, no, it's been really great to talk to you.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. It's always good to actually get the time to really think about what it is that's important to you and be able to share it. So I appreciate it.
No, awesome. Cool. Talk again soon.
Thanks, Zoe.
It's the Smart City Podcast. Whoa.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart City Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes can be found at thesmartcitypodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments for me or any of my guests, connect with me via email, zoe@thesmartcitypodcast.com, or via the socials. I'm on Twitter and Facebook at Smart City Pod. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.